You can interact with us so many ways. Go to www.emsgarage.com. Email us, emsgarage@gmail.com. Go to our Twitter account, @emsgarage. Or you can download us on iTunes. Just search EMS Garage. You can also call us, 303-720-6001.
The EMS Garage.
Okay, I got DC on the phone. They want to know if you can handle that call as well. Just confirming you are checking the patient.
Salem 922 is on scene.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the EMS Garage. It's your weekly podcast, and we've pretty much done it all already, so turn it off, go home, we're done. No, I'm your host, Chris Montero, the Geeky Medic, and you have tuned in to what may be the funnest podcast that has EMS Garage in the title. That's all I'm saying. So thanks for joining me. Tonight is, I have on the podcast, I was going to say on the phone, but that's not technically correct. Mr. Greg Fries, hello, sir.
Good evening, Chris. It's a real pleasure to be a part of this, the garage. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you. And so tell me about all these blogs that you do. What are your blogs again?
I've got a couple, but I write most regularly at everydayemstips.com and then at eps411.com a couple times a week. I try to write about e-learning topics relevant to emergency responders and trainers and educators. And then about once a week, I'm writing a post for PIOsocialmediatraining.com, a joint blog that I do with David Koenig in New York. And we're writing to public information and officers, as well as supervisors, incident command staff, and just general emergency responders that want to learn more about social media.
Very cool. And I actually got turned on to David by, I think, a mutual friend of ours, Roberta Jackson, and
right.
She's like, you gotta meet this guy, and I'd like to get him on the post on the podcast some night. I think he sounds pretty interesting too. So, thanks for joining us, Greg. Real quickly, if you listened to last week's podcast, Dr. Wesley kind of threw down, and I have apparently all bloggers on tonight, but no Dr. Wesley. So my hope is in the second week of December to have Dr. Wesley and the bloggers on in a cage match.
Sunday.
I was waiting for somebody to jump in. Okay, all right.
So I think somebody needs to say, you know what, Chris, I'm a lover, not a fighter.
You don't have to be a fighter. And you don't really have to fight. I just want to hear you guys and Dr. Wesley, you know, doing your thing. And I think it'd be great entertainment. Last week's episode was really good. So you guys have big shoes to fill. Unless you could talk like Dr. Wesley and be kind of curmudgeon-y. I told him last week we need to have a really cool EMS podcast, and I think we're going to work on it, so look for that coming up soon. Joining me also tonight is Mr. Tim Noonan, the Rogue Medic. Hello.
Hello.
And how have you been?
Just dealing with computer problems. So I haven't even caught up on last week's podcast yet.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Computer problems stink. You should buy a Mac. I'm just saying. Thanks for joining me tonight. Joining me also is Mr. Steve Whitehead. I think this is the first time you've been on.
Yes, you are correct. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And you are, can I call you the EMT spot?
You can.
Well, because we call the other guy Rogue Medic, and I'm Geeky Medic, and they're the Pod Medic, and you should be the EMT spot. But
I don't know how I feel about that.
It kind of sounds weird. You need like your own, we'll just call you... Do you have, like, a fire department nickname?
Not that I'm willing to admit.
Okay, all right. All right, good.
Actually, they do call me the senator, so I guess I have a diplomatic element to me.
Very nice. Very nice. So, since this is your first time on the podcast, you've been on the Educast, I know. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what you do, your blog. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Steve Whitehead. I'm a firefighter paramedic hailing from Colorado. I've been a paramedic for about 20 years now. I've been an author in EMS for maybe a little less than a decade. I've been published in GEMS and EMS magazine. I do speak at conferences occasionally. I am an instructor in our local EMT program, and I write a blog called The EMT Spot.
And
I've been doing that for about a year now.
And it's all theemtspot.com, correct?
It is, all one word.
And I love, I've often looked at your, the theme you're using in WordPress there, and I go to do it, and I want to change mine and do it all cool like yours, and I'm like, yeah, that's a lot of work. That took a lot of work. I mean, your site's pretty cool. I love that. I love the slider and all that. It's very cool.
Thank you. Thanks for saying that.
Right on. And actually, I'll admit I kind of read Steve's blog, but don't tell Greg. Don't tell Greg. And if you listen to the last 10 minutes of this podcast, you're going to understand what I'm talking about. You have to wait till after the credits roll because you're going to get something special tonight, and you'll understand why we call it Spot the Crazy Guy. EMS Garage, episode 62. So also joining me tonight is the Pod Medic. Hello, Mr. Jamie Davis.
How are you?
Good.
We're here with all of us wild and crazy people, and no Dr. Wesley to push back. But this is our turn. Last week was his turn. This is our turn. It'll be like a point counterpoint, and then we'll have the cage match.
Okay, I like that. I like that. Well, and there's no doctor to really control us. I think that's really the case.
We can't phone medical control. It's like a mass casualty. We're on our own.
It's awesome. I love it. Yeah, you should never let paramedics and nurses in the same room together. It's bad. Got to have a doctor in there. Yeah, that's good. So what have you been up to, Jamie? You been working on anything special?
Last week's episode of the Medicast was a huge success. I had Carissa and Natalie on, and Greg, and we were talking about products we saw down at the MS Expo and made our picks for innovative products, and really got a great response back from a lot of people talking about some of the things we discussed during the show. So it's really been exciting. I mean, it's been kind of a bit of a roller coaster ride after the EMS Expo, and we've just kind of been holding on and continuing and doing what we're doing best.
Right, and we're creating content. Tim, I forgot to ask you, what have you written lately? What's new on your blog? Have you got anything cool and fun and interesting?
I wandered off into sports commentary on my last post.
Ooh.
The Sunday night football game where the Patriots, I think it was, went for the fourth down conversion rather than punting.
Right.
Which is the conventional thing to do. And so many people have been critical of that, but there's actually research that shows that coaches are not aggressive enough in going for the fourth down. One blog post of a sports blog that I quoted on there, guy said, if we didn't have punting and somebody said, this is what we need to do, all the coaches would freak out and say, you mean I'm going to give up 25% of my chances to make a first down just so they get a slightly worse field position? We do the same thing in EMS. We have people who stick with something because this is the way we've always done it, and to question it is just, unfashionable.
Oh, that is a perfect segue into our first topic. I love it. Dr. Wesley had a post on gems.com this week, and we actually invited him on. He couldn't be on tonight because he's got call in the morning. But it's a study about, it's a street science column from him about the whether we're using PALS and its effectiveness, and really are all these merit badge courses really something we should be doing? Don't get me started on a rant on merit badge courses to begin with, because I think they're all stupid and bogus, but I think that maybe this has a place. Did you guys have a chance to read the article, and what are your initial thoughts on it?
I read it. I liked it. I agree with Dr. Wesley on this. His co-author on it was saying that he agreed with the original research that claimed that PALS led to better IV success, and that's kind of odd because you don't do IVs in PALS. I've taught pals for about 15 years, and there is no IV station. There may be places that decide to put one in themselves, but how do you improve IV success when you don't even have any practice at IV?
Very good point. Well, here's a question I'll throw out to the panel here. Do you think maybe that PALS has been successful in allowing paramedics and EMTs to say, I'm not afraid to touch a patient and get aggressive with a patient, so therefore all of their success rates go up?
I think that is one of the goals of PALS, but I don't think they've been very successful at it. My impression dealing with students who are mostly nurses, so they're not generally pediatric nurses, not generally going to see children, is that they leave with the same fear of children that they had when they started out. EMS may be a little bit better at developing a comfort level with kids, but I think it takes more than a programmed course to get over that.
Well, and I think that if you're going to look at a pediatric course, especially in the EMS setting, I think a good example is the PEP course. If you're going to take a pediatric course, I think the PEP course is much better at creating a better comfort level with dealing with pediatric patients and understanding pediatric physiology and really getting a better hands-on approach to dealing with a multitude of different situations. PALS is, you know, ACLS for kids, and it's a classroom course. There's some hands-on, but not nearly enough, I think, to really create a comfort level, and I'm PALS certified simply because I'm an RN too, and it's one of the few courses that crosses borders easily, and so I tend to renew and recert my PALS over anything else for pediatric care. But you know, I think that in my experience, and I've taken PEP classes several times, you know, if you're going to take a pediatric class, I think that class does a much better job of helping you be more comfortable when you do have that pediatric patient, in assessing, in understanding what's going on with that patient, and in being more comfortable handling certain skills with dealing with pediatric patients. Has anyone else had that experience?
I would agree, and I would add something that I would add is I think there's an association between the volume of patients that you see and the necessity to take that merit badge course. For instance, I think if I had never had another ACLS course since my first one 2 decades ago, I don't think I would be running a cardiac arrest terribly different today. If I had never had a PHTLS course, I think my trauma care would be very similar. In the case of PALS, I feel like I am more comfortable addressing a pediatric emergency. I'm better as a paramedic for having that course because I don't see a lot of kids. I do see plenty of cardiac arrests. I do see trauma patients. I don't see a lot of pediatric patients. So maybe there's also that variable, the volume of that patient type that you see and the necessity to have that specialized recurring training.
The thing about the volume, I think, is a good one, and just exposure to kids. I worked several years in an urgent care where, you know, it was almost all kids, and seeing lots of kids, lots and lots of just the basic assessment and making that decision of sick or not sick. And, you know, occasionally we would have kids that are legitimately very sick where you'd go into the urgent care room and you'd think, oh my, this is not right. This kid is in the wrong place. And then, so that familiarity, and, you know, for me, I also did 11 years in the summer camping business where I got to see, you know, sick kids and kids fall off of horses and fall off of bicycles and run into each other and just sort of general pediatric trauma. And, you know, there's no substitute for that kind of day in, day out exposure you get into kids that you could replicate in an 8 or 12 or 16-hour training course, especially when so much of it is focused on, you know, that very small percentage of kids way at the end of the continuum in cardiac arrest or respiratory arrest.
Have you guys ever taken a PEP class?
I haven't.
No.
No.
So PEP basically says, you know, they take PALS and they kind of change it around a little bit, and using exactly what Greg just said, kind of this triangle of the really bad stuff is at the top. You have a little bit of every once in a while you need to give them medications, every once in a while you need to do CPR, all the way down to the bottom of the triangle, which says the most important thing you can do is manage a kid's airway and recognize when they are starting to get sick, and then move up the continuum from there. And I really appreciate that model in teaching about pediatrics because, you know, well, honestly, aren't they just little adults anyway? I mean, seriously. No, I'm teasing. Okay.
There you go. All right. Oh, they're not little adults.
Smack down.
No. I'm teasing.
But the differences aren't that dramatic. There are several important differences, but most of the stuff, yeah, they are like little adults. They're much healthier little adults most of the time, but we still go into the home and pick up kids who are on vents and have other assistive devices that we didn't used to have when I started EMS.
Well, dude, that's a whole other thing. Go ahead, Greg.
I was just going to say, don't you think there's some like self-fulfilling prophecy at work of just like, oh my gosh, it's a kid, we should all be nervous, and then indeed you become all nervous, and that makes it more complicated than if you just thought, well, you know.
My worst call was because of that, and it wasn't any of us who were nervous because of it. It was when we got to the hospital, and the anesthesiologist came down to try to intubate the kid, and he just lost it. Kid didn't need to be intubated until we arrived at the hospital. The ER doc made one attempt and said, I'm not getting this, I'm calling anesthesia. And the guy just didn't know how to deal with the kid airway and refused to listen to anybody else. And basically the kid died because of mismanaged airway. And I think it was entirely his stress level that did it.
Wow. And
ouch.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, that's the call that if I could do anything over again, that would be the one I would change.
And I think that, you know, that's the time that the consequences were tragic. I think there's a lot of other times where the stress of the providers maybe doesn't actually have any impact, good or bad, on the care. You know, it's just a stressful ride to the hospital. And then at some point, somebody with a cool head, you know, takes over and moves things along.
Well, this was the opposite.
Right. But probably the rare case where the, you know, stress and tragic consequences, and oftentimes it's probably just stress with no real impact other than continuing stress.
Well, I think our job as EMS is to show up and calm everybody down. Anything we do beyond that is gravy, but as long as we show up and calm everybody down, things aren't going to be that bad.
We hope.
Well, you can deal with it. Once right. You're calm, once you have everybody de-stressed, you can figure out what to do. But when people are screaming and just having tunnel vision and stressed out about things, yep, you're not accomplishing things that are good most of the time.
You know, I've often counseled new providers that the most valuable skill they'll ever use in the field is the taking of a deep breath. You know, it mm-hmm. just, you know, it is sometimes when things start feeling like it's a runaway train, that's the moment where you have to put both hands on your thighs while you're sitting on that bench seat and just take a deep breath before you do another thing, because it is, you need to clear your mind and get back on track and start with the basics and move with the things you know how to do. I saw when I was first an early EMT, somebody in a cardiac arrest that was, you know, trying to move too fast and kicked an IV out of place that was took too long to get started to begin with, and kicked the IV line because it was just chicken with the head cut off running around. And, you know, that's the kind of thing. It made such an impression on me at that time that I've just always said there's nothing that needs to be done fast. It needs to be done well and done right. And so I think you're right, Tim. It's all about us being the presence and being the calming force And it doesn't matter if you're nervous on the inside. You've got to have that outward calm, and that's a skill in and of itself.
You've only had that happen one time, Jamie? You've been fortunate enough to only see that happen one time in your career?
Well, that's just the time it happened when it made that impression on me early, and sure. I went from that point and said, you know what, this was a mistake that was avoidable, and if there's, you know, I try to learn from those situations as much as I can, and one of the things it taught me was that, you know, it needs to be calm. We need to take our time. We need to do the job right, and it's just. I can't say enough about it. You know, a deep breath can just calm everything down, and you can do it when you're testing. You can do it when you're working through your skills. You can do it when you're in the field. It is one of those things that if you can master the technique, and you know, we all know how to do it, but it's remembering to do it that's the key.
And from the start of the call, when I'm getting ready to call in, responding to the call, take a deep breath, give them a nice, slow response. The more urgent the call sounds, the calmer I want to be on the radio. People would tell me if I were calling in New York City about the 9/11 planes hitting the World Trade Center, that I'd call in with, oh, yeah, fire board, we've got another one, that I sound like I'm not aware of what's going on, but I'm doing just that. I take a deep breath, slow everything down. Because once you start out the call getting excited, it's hard to back off on it. It's like anybody having a panic attack. Once they get started, elevate their heart rate, breathing faster, it's very hard to slow them down.
Well, I think what you're saying is absolutely true, that the more, because I've always found, you know, early in my career, I would always be like, you know, you'd kind of be like a chicken with your head cut off a little bit. And then the more and more I went through my career, the busier the call got, the quieter I became. And people are like, well, what's up with you? And it's like, it's creating that, you have got to be the center of that calm in that patient's life and that scene's life and the people that are surrounding it and the fire department and everybody else that may be around that scene. You have to be the one that is the calming influence. And especially when we're talking about patients having an MI or things like that, that, you know, you don't want to exacerbate it and make it worse.
Exactly.
When I'm in an FI situation, I've taken to calling it the illusion of control.
Nice.
Where it doesn't matter if you're in control at that moment or not. Part of what you do as a provider is create the illusion of control. And it can be hardest when things do start to go wrong. When people do get excited and that IV gets kicked out of the arm, being able to, instead of looking frustrated or angry and letting everybody know that things aren't going well, being able to say, great, now that we've got that IV out of the way, let's go ahead and strip out another one. Checking the other arm. That's the illusion of control. You know, right. This is exactly how we intended it to happen.
Right. Is that idea of the duck? You look under the water and their feet are just going like crazy, but on the top, it's all fine. You know?
Exactly.
Your heart may be going 90,000 miles an hour, but on the outside, people aren't seeing, you know, you sweat and things like that. I think that's absolutely true. And I think that holds true for PALS. But okay, so let's get back to the original question. Does it matter? Does PALS matter or not? Do you think it makes us better providers? And then we can maybe talk about merit badge courses a little bit. But do you think that this one makes us better?
I think all of the first maybe 2 weeks after you take the course, it probably matters. But you know, I think the knowledge retention drop off is so severe after any sort of like day-long or two-day training course, you know, that unless
you try to pack so much into it. I agree with you, Greg. It's just this flood of information, and then, you know, a test that, you know, I've heard numerous instructors say, you know, the PALS and the ACLS tests have to be easy enough for doctors to pass. and I was not the one who said that, but I've heard that from four or five different instructors of ACLS and PALS, because doctors have to have them, and we can't have them fail in the classes in the hospital because they have to maintain the certification for work for their workplace. So the course is made in such a way that they can pass it. It's not easy, so we can pass it. And we probably use it more than most physicians ever will. So,
okay. Well,
yes. Well said.
Good point. I think we've all been in EMS long enough, probably, to have taken the original ACLS years and years ago when there would be a nurse in there that would literally be slapping your hand with a ruler telling you you didn't do it right. I would see nurses and doctors crying in ACLS class. And, you miss the wrong question and you're out. You're done. You got to go back and go all the way through it again. And people's career rode on it. And, oh, it was just terrible. And then they came out with kinder, gentler ACLS. And then they went, maybe that was too kind and gentle. And now they've kind of found a happy medium. But, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's geared toward what we want to make it. It's something to show that we have a two-day competency in something we may or may not use again. And I agree. We use ACLS a lot from the aspect that it's in our protocol and it's kind of interwoven into our entire practice. Whereas PALS and other merit badge courses, AMLS, I'll throw all the other ones in, maybe aren't. I don't know. So
well,
I guess
they're designed for the people who don't use them on a regular basis, which is one of the reasons why you have so many medics teaching ACLS. Advanced trauma life support is similar. It's designed more for the emergency physician at the non-trauma hospital rather than for at the trauma center. It's for the people who don't do it all the time to get them to remember these are the steps that you want to go through.
And as a person in a rural service, I have to say that I sometimes complain about taking some of these merit badge courses again and again and again, but I also always come out of the class saying, "Wow, I forgot that." And you know, it's not something I use all the time, and I need to be refreshing my memory. And I'm a guy who's, you know, insane about going and reading a lot of information and refreshing my knowledge as much as I can on a regular basis. And I still come away from these courses with knowledge somewhere that had to be unlocked again. But I, you know, a lot of these things are stuff we learned in the beginning, and we just need to, you know, this is why we have continuing education. I'd like to see it be a little more loose in our ability to adapt different things to it. But, you know, this is the way it's set up. And you can take these, you know, those four merit badge courses and pretty much recert your paramedic off of that with a few extra things. And if that's how easy it's going to be, that's what they've built the program around.
But we're becoming merit badge medics.
Well, you could look at it that way. I mean, that's... It's kind of a cynical way to look at it, but I see where
I'm
you're
cynical
coming from. Indeed, you are.
I can't believe anyone's ever called you cynical, Tim.
That's why he's the rogue.
This one time.
I'm thinking of starting a new training program called ATOS, where I'll put it all together in a course called All That Other Stuff.
I think they already called it AMLS.
Oh.
See, I like the AMLS class. I took it a couple of years ago, and I enjoyed. I think it did for medical cases what the PEP class did for pediatric cases. I think it just kind of helped us think a little bit differently when we approached some of the patients and thought a little bit more in depth about what was going on under the surface. I know people don't like all these classes and they're never going to be perfect, but I also think that they have a purpose. And for people that are running, you know, busy services where they're running 12, 20 more calls a day and they're just running their butts off, they see enough in the field and keep their skills fresh. They don't need it. But for, you know, somebody like me who runs in a service that only sees 1200 patients a year total, and I'm only going to see a small number of that, what do I do to maintain and keep my skills fresh? And these are, you know, I can read, I can stay online, I can do all the things I need to do to try to keep my skills up. But ultimately, courses like this are what help keep me grounded in the basics.
Sure. But AMLS, I'd like to say I do agree. I think AMLS is the best of the bunch of them. AMLS is the only one of the bunch that I took the AMLS instructor's course, was able to teach AMLS, and I did not feel comfortable that I had a knowledge base that I should be standing up teaching AMLS. I just have that respect for that curriculum. But to kind of throw it back to Rogue Medic, I was going to like maybe a more positive way to frame this, what you're saying. That's why you are the Rogue Medic and I have the touchy feely happy blog. I think
that's what this is, feely happy blog.com.
Ooh, I like that one.
It's for EMS. Yeah, mine's.
That's right.
Mine's more reach out and slap someone rather than reach out and touch someone.
But what this has done is created a group of core competencies. And whether or not it's created the right core competencies is very debatable. But it has created a grouping of core competencies that we've said, look, if you're going to be a paramedic from east to west coast, you're going to have to renew these competencies in some form or another. Every 2 years. And I don't think that's such a bad thing. Maybe you live on the beltway, you see trauma all day, you don't need it, but you do need to be in that PALS class, or you're in Greg's situation, you're seeing kids all the time, but guess what? ACLS is the one that you need. But regardless, there is a core competency.
Well, I think I've come up with a couple new ones then. If we're going to have some core competencies, I think we ought to have VCC and RTT as a whole 2-day course. VCC, vomit cleanup class, and RTT that you send all of your EMTs to, because the paramedics won't do this, rectal thermometer temperature taking class. So I think that we really need that class, because, you know, I remember the first time I ever handed the rectal thermometer to an EMT student or EMT partner, and I said, that's your job. And he kind of looked at me and, really? And I'm like, yep. And I rolled the patient right toward me. So, you know, I'm just saying. I mean, those are competencies we use every day.
And DMT.
I'm Pennsylvania. We don't do rectal temperatures.
Well, you have to when you have that cold water drowning thing. Anyway.
I don't think it's in our scope of practice at all.
Yeah,
not mine either. But
the EMT
Chris
doesn't
just
need
likes
to know
it.
That. The EMT doesn't need to know that.
So
this was years ago.
You really have to have a scope of practice that tells you different temperature routes. Like, does the scope of practice tell you you can take an oral or an axillary or a
no
a panic temperature?
I thought you took a temperature. Take a temperature.
Are you guys being facetious?
No, anything that is penetrating is outside of the scope of practice unless it is specifically listed as being in scope of practice.
Yeah, that's the way I've always heard it too, Tim. We don't do rectal temps. We have the ear canal thermometers, and we also keep a spare that we can use for oral or axillary temperatures.
Wow. It's heartbreaking.
That's interesting. Okay, well, I'm sorry. What were you going to say, Steve? You said something right before we went down the right before
the
this thing right before this podcast went down the crapper.
I was going to suggest
we didn't go down, we went up.
Oh, yeah. I was gonna, yeah,
it went up the crapper.
Wow.
I was going to suggest DMTGA certification, the don't make the drunk guy angry certification.
Ooh, now that, you know, that should. That actually would be a good class. I think that's called verbal judo, and I really, you know, that's probably not a bad one. If we're going to pick, I think that's really a good one, because how many people have had some drunk guy or some drunk gal take a swing at them?
You know what I hate? I hate getting handoff from somebody who's gotten them good and riled up. And you get them in the back of the unit, and you're getting ready to leave, and you've got them calmed down, and they're trusting you a little bit. And whoever the idiot was who handed them off to you sticks their head in and starts the argument all over again.
Right.
And I've had that happen I don't know how many times, and it's the same darn guy, and I'm not going to say his name here in national podcaster land, but he probably
say
knows
Will
who he
Dunn.
Is.
Go ahead, say Will Dunn.
Oh, Will Dunn. I love it.
Well, you know, I think everybody has a Will Dunn in their district.
Will Dunn, we love you. You know,
we do. Will,
but still, we love to pick on
love.
You too.
Nothing but love.
But I mean, we all have that person that just loves to play with drunks, and it is not conducive towards good patient care. And you know, whoever gets stuck riding with that person to the hospital, and in my area, that's a 20 to 30 minute ride. The last place you want to be is shut in a small box with an irate drunk while you're going 60 miles an hour.
Right. Yeah, I've been in that thing, and we have that same problem here, so I know exactly. I think Verse said the answer, though, really.
Yeah, but if you drug the other medic, then you've got to go back and get his vehicle.
Oh,
well,
I see.
Then he's got a big vehicle.
I learned my sedation techniques from a very wise and astute ER doctor who told me one day, as I'm bringing in somebody that's kicking and screaming and basically pounding on us, he goes, yeah, I have a 2 or a 3 MF rule. I'm like, really? What is that? He goes, yeah, the third time they call me mother, beep, they get Versed and they go night night. I'm like, oh, that's a great one. I said, this guy would have gotten it like 20 minutes ago. He goes, yeah, I know. He goes, that you need to learn that. I'm like, okay. So I learned a valuable lesson that day.
I've heard from several flight medics in here in Maryland down at Shock Trauma, the one F bomb and you're out.
One. Wow.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. They just don't have the time to put up with it. And if somebody's down there and they're not, I mean, you know, they've got other patients to deal with, and it's not that big a room that where shock trauma is. I mean, everybody's kind of in one space with curtains between them, and it's you know, it's somebody that's causing issues like that is affecting everybody's patient care.
I don't know if my grandma would make it through unsedated.
Wow!
Can I come to your house for Thanksgiving?
Exactly. I'm like, well,
you're invited.
Family dinner.
Bring the Versed.
Nice. I love it. Oh, well, you know, we should probably move on to other topics other than the topics we've been talking about, which have been very interesting tonight, I have to say. There was an article on EMS1.com this week about a fire department in Maryland. Maybe you can fill us in, Jamie. You may know about this or not. I don't know. And if you have a problem talking about it, I don't want to bring you into it. But there's a fire department in Maryland, Pikesville, Maryland, to be exact, where Jewish medics are claiming that the fire department is discriminating against them. Jamie, you actually had a really good comment about this, and I wanted to.
Well, I want to start off with saying, you know, Pikesville is a suburb of Baltimore, okay. And it is one of the primary. Historically primary locations for the Jewish community in and around Baltimore, as far as the suburbs right there. And so it's got a large Jewish community, very large Orthodox community. And the issue is that these Jewish medics are being told they can no longer ride in their local department because their beards interfere with the seal of an SCBA, a self-contained breathing apparatus. And this has been something that came down, this article says, from Baltimore County government that is assisting with funding and you know, handles oversight for the volunteer services. But it's actually a Maryland state issue because we have it in our area. There are guys that you know, complain because they had to shave their beards if they wanted to ride, and that covered both sides. It covers EMS and fire because the EMS providers are expected to be able to wear SCBA in a situation where they may need to don it to provide care safely, this is a difficult situation. The argument that these three medics are posing is that the department should find an alternative resource for them that is not the standard face mask. Is there another resource that allows them to to go ahead and use their SCBA. It's interesting because I live very close to the Pennsylvania border, and we have Amish that help and assist in local volunteer fire departments in Pennsylvania, and you know, they have separated some of their duties out by the size of their beards, I guess you could say. Some of them have shaved them around in such a way that they can get their SCBA masks on, and adjusted that. And while it might not be strictly religious for the Amish, it certainly is a cultural tradition. So I don't know how I feel on this. I think sometimes there, and I made the comment that some of these departments, and this is the problem when you mix fire and EMS, some of these departments, you know, their fire chief, their father was a fire chief, their grandfather was a fire chief, and I think some of them still act like it's 1909.
Mm, wow. Well, maybe this begs the bigger question that as we get more culturally, I mean, we are a very culturally diverse nation, and I think that plays into our heritage quite a bit, but how do we manufacture and create items that people of different religious faiths, different ethnic backgrounds can effectively utilize while doing their job? Do they all have to look exactly the same way so that their face mask fits the same? Those type of issues, or do we create something new that fits what job needs to be done? And I don't know the answer. I'm just posing the question, and because it's difficult. I know that there are other places around the country that deal with other similar issues, and boy, I definitely understand it. And you know, I guess if we were talking about, you know, them wanting to take time off or a Jewish holiday, things like that, it would be a much different issue. And how do we move on? Go ahead. I'm just rambling now.
Chris, a couple of things. One, that in that article, the three men that are appealing this decision said that they had found an alternative to this, an alternative type of SCBA mask. And then I'm actually reading another blog post now from hrblunders.com that says, you know, this issue of can a employer require its employees to be clean shaven, and for religious reasons they're exempt from the district's no beards policy under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. But you know, the other bizarre thing about this is just to me, and of why are medics wearing SCBAs
big time
ever? And you know, and we just, and sort of put that in the context of in Maryland, you as a medic, you can't take a rectal temperature, but they're expecting you to don an SCBA and treat victims in the hot zone without
that's a good point.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, they've studied medics treating people in Class A suits, and they found that there's just about nothing that we do well when we've got all that stuff on.
Right.
Well, and this isn't even a Class A suit. This is, we're talking literally turnout gear with an SCBA and a face mask on. I mean, really only would this be relevant in, let's say, carbon monoxide poisoning situation. And my argument...
There were EMTs on scene?
My argument would be, this is a volunteer fire department. I guarantee you that half the active firefighters that don't ride EMS are EMTBs and certainly are qualified to remove anybody from a hot or a warm zone to an area where they can be safely treated by medics responding. And like you said, we have SCBA on. We have to carry two units of SCBA on our ambulance, and we have them on there, and we take them out, and we check the bottles, and we put them back in the case, and they go back in the side compartment. And I don't think they've ever been worn by anyone. Because they're not used, but they are required to be carried. This is just one of those rules where because these guys are part of a fire department, they are covered. They must follow all the fire department rules, whether they make sense for them as medics or not. And this is just another indication of this issue with why are we working 24-hour shifts because the fire department works 24-hour shifts, when every study out there shows that, you know, medics, as they get tired, because we're running more calls, we're not getting any sleep in that 24 hours. We run those situations, we don't get enough sleep, and that's where mistakes get made medically. But go ahead, because the fire department works 24-hour shifts, and it wouldn't be fair to do differently. This is another situation that just proves the point that EMS and fire should not have anything to do with each other. There, I stirred up that can of worms.
Oh, man. Oh, go ahead, Steve. Bring this
up. Shake it. You know, the fire department, it's not necessarily their rule. It's them trying to be NFPA compliant. If they have personnel that are supposed to wear the SCBA, it's not their choice. Well, it is. It may be their choice if they choose to be NFPA compliant. But the guideline is through NFPA that every year they have to be tested in the SCBA mask. They have to be able to wear it, and they get hooked up to a machine and touch their toes and talk about rainbows, and the machine tells them if they're achieving a proper seal.
That's so a negative pressure seal, and it's used with positive pressure. Right?
Okay.
Well, you're right. That's exactly what we have to do. But again, why does that? Because it applies to all personnel in the department. If they want to be NFPA compliant, they have to maintain all personnel that are actively riding under that certification. It is not necessary for people that are only riding the ambulance, but it has to cover everybody. So that's the way they do it.
Yeah. And that, I think that kind of goes back to what Greg was saying, the fallback point of why are these personnel being required to operate inside of a hot zone if their primary role is simply EMS providers. I think there's definitely a good argument, you know, is the department looking for reasonable accommodation? You know, your HR person, you know, is definitely familiar with reasonable accommodation. And if there are reasonable accommodations for these guys, then definitely I think the department has an obligation to explore them, you know.
The Gems Connect comments on this has some interesting stuff. One of the guys is explaining that since they use negative pressure to test the seal on it, it's not a real world test, and using positive pressure, you're not getting any inhalation of carbon monoxide or any other gas that'll be in the environment because the positive pressure is forcing it out. And most of these beards that are being discussed are very neatly trimmed beards, so he has some pictures on Gems Connect, so they're able to get a good seal. It's just the department rule that you have to be clean shaven. Doesn't matter if you get a good seal, you have to be clean shaven. And you've got people who are clean shaven who are never getting a good seal, so
that I can attest to. Confession to hear. Every year they ask me, "Hey, do you taste this bitter spray or whatever?" I don't know. They say it's bitter, but I've never tasted it.
Well, that's the difference between a qualitative and a quantitative test. And now you're talking about
the N95 mask.
Right. Well, I mean, to truly do good fit test, you have to have the proper equipment. Yeah, okay, you're going to get some you're going to be able to kind of fit with an N95 in a qualitative test, but with a quantitative test, with which is where they actually read the air pressure inside the mask versus the air pressure outside the mask and really determine if things are getting through and blah blah blah. That's the only true way to make sure that this thing's right. Yeah, because you're right, some people aren't sensitive to the Bitrix solution that you were talking about, Greg. Yeah. And we've had to fit test every provider in our county for H1N1 and N95 masks now. Very reminiscent of the anthrax scares of 2003. I don't know. I mean,
well, on the other side of this is a volunteer organization.
Right.
These are not paid medics. These are volunteers, and I'm sure this volunteer organization just made a rule. And what's their recourse? They're not losing a job. They're not losing income over this. This is, you know, it says in there, this is a bit of a turf war. I wouldn't be surprised. And, you know, it, it is, it is just somebody stirring up things because they want to make a point on one side or the other. And I'm not choosing because I think it's a stupid argument. I don't think either side has much to say about it. I feel bad that these medics can't do this, but I also am a believer that if that's the rule and it's a volunteer organization, they're not being discriminated financially. They're just being told they can't volunteer in this organization. Does that stand the same level of scrutiny mm-hmm. as an employer does?
But is it a rule that really makes a difference in anything that they do? Are they required to have a good seal? Are they required to be clean-shaven because the chief wants them all to be clean-shaven? Or are they required to pass a test on the mask under circumstances that the mask is never used, where it's negative pressure? Use it under positive pressure circumstances. See if they can, you know, smell something then. It's not going to happen because the positive pressure is preventing right. whatever from getting into the mask.
Well, so I'm just saying,
we've got so many levels of not being a real world situation.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, is this volunteer organization required to make itself available to every person that's around it? If it's a volunteer organization, do they stand to the same level of scrutiny as a paid organization does?
As far as discrimination goes, I would say yes.
So. On this specific issue, it's hard to say, but in general, you know, I think especially if you run a combo department of, you know, employees and paid on-call volunteers, it would make sense that you would have the same set of workplace rules for everybody. And, you know, but I'm no HR expert. We were talking about Roberta Jackson earlier, and maybe she's the person that we try to get on to talk about some of these issues with, you know, workplace rules and what makes sense and what do you do, you know. Obviously, I would think as a manager, you would want to try to resolve this before it becomes a national news item and you have the ACLU representing one side and the county on the other side. And, you know,
too late as far as the national news goes.
Yeah.
What's that?
Too late as far as the national news story
right.
goes.
Right.
Well, heck, we're talking
I think he
about
means
it.
Before this happened, they should have done something rather than just say, oh, we're not doing anything, and that's final.
Yeah, yep. They should have resolved this.
But that's the challenge. This isn't necessarily an HR manager making this decision. This is last year's elected fire chief. you know, and the next year's elected fire chief can change the rule.
But here's a bigger question, and reading further in the article, the real, and maybe this comes down to the fact that maybe there's a bit of a turf war going on too. I mean, if you read down into the article, they're talking about how the, you know, they're volunteering for another fire department, and there's been a little bit of animosity between
actually
the departments, and they're
volunteering for a civic organization that has emergency response characteristics. I think
right.
it's kind of like a Red Cross organization that they are also responding with, and it's just a, you know, like I said, it's a mess. That whole area, the whole situation's screwed up. We've had issues with it. You know, again, it just comes down to why are they doing this? Greg, you and I talked about this by email. You know, talking about discrimination, we can even extrapolate into students. I got an email from a student listener to the show who has a hearing impairment and has not been able to pass an EMT class because he can't hear a blood pressure with a standard stethoscope and can't afford to get an amplified stethoscope, and was inquiring with me what his rights and what his rights were and what the responsibilities of his program were. And, you know, this.
Well,
you know, where do you draw the line with what you can and can't do to fulfill the job in this type of a field?
Well, and as I dug into that specific situation further, it didn't even... What was occurring was he wasn't even getting the opportunity to test. He was being washed out in either the application phase or in the first few days of class of instructors saying, well, you're not going to be able to do this. We don't have time to give you anything special. You know, you're better off quitting now. And clearly, whatever community colleges or training programs those are, really need to get their ducks together there, because, you know, this student, fortunately for those schools, is just going to Jamie and I, but clearly he could make a pretty significant case, in my opinion, if he's being washed out simply because he has a partial hearing deficit and the instructors don't want to take the time to make sure he knows and can perform the skill.
There was an article in one of the journals, the EMS journals, GEMS or EMS magazine, about 10 or 15 years ago about people with disabilities working in EMS. One was a deaf person, and they were able to palpate both the upper and lower numbers, systolic and diastolic. And there's no reason why you can't on most patients. Auscultating it is nice. That's the way we're used to doing it, but what are we really doing with the blood pressure other than monitoring the trend of the vital signs?
Can I ask the obvious question? What about breath sounds? What about abdominal? Abdominal tone.
You can palpate the breath sounds also. It's called digital fremitus. You put your hand against their back, and you can feel the vibration from the sound that is being made. You can tell the difference between crackles, bronchi, and clear breath sounds.
But not wheezes.
But you can't tell the depth. You can't tell where they're at as far as the depth.
Back up though, Chris. Yeah. Like, you know, there's sort of two conversations here. Is one conversation is, you know, who should be, anybody should really be allowed to take a EMT class. You know, Stephen Hawking, if he wants to take EMT class, he should be able to. You could be a full quadriplegic. It's then the next issue comes, well, are you able to perform the skills at that certification and become certified and then become employed? And, you know, so at some point, if there's requirements to the job, you know, if you're wheelchair bound, you know, you're not going to be able to lift patients. And, you know, the job description is going to be saying something like you need to be able to lift 50 pounds to a height above your waist or something like that. So, you know, before, and I think that's part of what instructors do is they, on day one, they advance all the way to, well, boy, you told me you can't hear very well. Well, you're never going to get a job. You might as well give up now, which is awful. And then assumes that the instructor has some knowledge of employment practices that they likely don't have. So I feel strongly about this.
Right. Oh, no. I hear that loud and clear. I think.
Sorry.
No. I think you're right. And yeah.
Part of it is that we assume that there is one and only one way of doing things, and we attribute all sorts of relevance to the information that we gather, although we don't have evidence to show that it really makes a big difference. So we should show that the information that they need to gather by this method can't be gathered by other methods, and that it is actually relevant to what we do.
Right. And that's a great segue to Tim's recent blog post titled Magic Sirens Prevent Ambulance Drivers from Hitting Things.
how does that prevent you from hitting things?
No, because what they've done with this news story is they've assigned relevance to these sirens on the reduction of ambulance collisions. And
it's magical.
That sort of the traction that this story got was amazing. And then I'm just so grateful for Tim's really trouncing the whole concept.
My cynicism?
No, reality.
I don't think I don't think there's any cynicism in that. I think it's just, yeah. So, Tim, tell us why you don't think that they're going to stop, that the siren will stop them from hitting things.
Well, in the comments to what I wrote, this mysterious stranger named Buckman, who isn't here tonight, wrote about the three different ambulances or types of sirens that he's used. And he said, well, I notice a very big difference in the way traffic responds. But regardless of which siren I'm using, I don't get into an accident because I don't progress until it is safe to do so. And I'm constantly observing the surroundings to see when, you know, somebody is starting to move or when something else is going on, which is what we should be doing. We need to train drivers to drive safely, to drive competently, rather than just give them bigger noisemakers and hope that everybody will run out of the way.
Well, I think you're right. And I mean, in my personal vehicle, I approach intersections and I always assume the other guy is not going to stop, even though they may have a stop sign or I may have the green light. If it looks like they're not slowing down, then I'll be the one that stops. And I think that, you know, that whole due regard thing that you're supposed to use when driving an emergency vehicle, just carries through. That some people just think that there's, like you said, a magic siren. It's just like a magic carpet ride. That once we turn that thing on, we can do what we want, and no, everyone will get out of our way. And we all know how fake that is. And what makes us think if we ride behind someone for 10 minutes with our air horns blowing and the siren going, and they still haven't noticed us? What makes us think that somebody coming from a different direction, perpendicular to our path of travel, starting a quarter mile away, is going to know anything about where we are?
Mm-hmm. Okay. You see fire trucks get into crashes on a regular basis, and they claim that, oh, we have to stop at every red light, but when they show the video of the crash, they're traveling at 30, 40, 50 miles an hour when they take out the tiny little SUV that happened to get in their way.
True, and we've talked about ambulance safety a lot on this show, but you know, if we had actually given our people more than a 10-minute orientation to the ambulance and really taught them how to drive an ambulance safely over a multiple day period and refresh that training every couple of years, talk about a course we could actually use other than PALS. That could be it. That we train our people how to drive in all kinds of conditions, and you know, we send all of our people to winter driving school, and which is a 1-day course put on by Bridgestone up in Steamboat, Colorado, and it is awesome. You ever want to drive around in the snow all day in somebody else's vehicle and maybe or maybe not crash it? That's the day, because it's, oh, what a blast. And so you get the idea of vehicle dynamics, and everybody's like, well, it's not an ambulance. Yeah, but you know what? Those same principles apply. It doesn't matter. Yeah, as it gets bigger, your forces get changed, but as long as you understand what not to do in the first place, you probably won't do them when the time comes.
You have traction or you don't.
Right.
You know, I'm not, I don't want to bag too hard on the siren and that the cars are getting more and more insulated. They're becoming greater barriers to sound. The stereos get louder. The world gets more inundated with other things to distract us. So if you can make a siren so loud that people feel it and they're more likely to get out of my way, great. I'm all for that. But I think just like Tim saying, in the end, it doesn't matter as far as whether or not I'm going to hit them, because that's due regard. I still have to practice due regard. Is it going to keep me from hitting them? No, it doesn't matter in the slightest, because I still am driving with due regard.
Well, you know what we need? I think we're going the wrong direction with sirens here. You know, they're getting louder and higher in pitch. We need to get like subwoofer sirens.
Well, that's what this
howler is. And
the howler vibrates the vehicles around it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all very nice. I don't care if it's magic or not, or if it works or not. I just want one because I'm tired of the people pulling up next to me and shaking my vehicle. I want to turn one on that knocks, you know, blows out all their windows.
I'm going to suggest that another alternative to louder sirens and more flashy lights is no sirens and no flashy lights.
Oh, I was just going to suggest that.
No. I knew I was going here.
I love it.
Yes,
love
but the howler goes to 11.
Yeah.
So yeah, now we get to segue into the trauma study.
Oh, well, all the studies. 8 minutes and 59 seconds is a stupid benchmark, and no service should have to talk about it, and you shouldn't have to respond emergent more than 90 or 4% of the time.
Maybe this is a good time to segue to the credits.
Yeah, I think we're there, because that could be another 40-minute discussion all by itself. Thank you, Greg.
One other thing on the PALS. They said that they improved. Yes. They said they improved intubation, but it's a course that's taken every other year. How long after they took the course were they intubating? They're comparing the intubation rates with people who took PALS and people who didn't. Wouldn't it be better to get a pediatric intubation mannequin and have the medics every month, maybe every other month, practice intubation, have them do it on a much more regular basis and require that? If you really want people to be good at airway management, familiarity is what they need, not something every other year. Less often than you do taxes.
Yeah, good point. Well, you know what? If they did have the IRS of the airway world, we would probably
need them.
Yeah, well, true. We would probably never. Well, that probably is well done right there. We would probably never need the ability to intubate a pediatric patient, because if you took care of them in the first place, most of the time, I found pediatrics are either dead or they're going to be just fine. And there is no in between, and so I guess we just have to decide at what point do we deal. Because I think oftentimes we're more amped up to transport a quote unquote dead child to the hospital, versus you know, the 74-year-old grandfather who passed away in his sleep last night. People are more readily acceptable of that than a SIDS case in a crib. And I think that as an industry, we need to look at that. And as a society, I think that becomes easier and easier the older our profession gets, because I know that we don't transport babies like that. But it can happen, and I see how that can happen. So anyway, nice segue out, because we are way over time. And if you listen to the end of the podcast tonight, we're going to be way over time. So, Tim, thank you. Tell us where we can find you.
RogueMedic.blogspot.com. And also on paramedicine101.blogspot.com.
Ooh, is that a new blog?
No, it's been around for since, I think, March. Adam Thompson is the guy who started it. He got me involved in writing some posts for it. Kelly Grayson, a bunch of other people. Chris from Life Under the Lights. There are a lot of contributors, and I would have to look at the site, and my computer is not functioning on even bringing up my blog right now, so I can't give you all of the names, but there are a lot of people writing for it. Adam and I do most of the writing, but everybody, you know, with a good idea, welcome to write something. Either email me or email Adam.
Cool. All right.
That's much more education-focused than my blog. Mine, I get into a lot of other stuff.
You're the pea in the pod with Buck Ferris and his Gomerville blog. So
curmudgeon thing going between the two of us, and, you know, find that we have a lot of company out there. Too young to retire.
I think what we ought to do is have the new podcast, EMS Cynic.
Yeah, cranky geeks for EMS, right?
Well, kind of, yeah. But then we also could have the EMS curmudgeon, and we could do I could do podcasting all day. This could be fun. Well, thanks for joining me, Tim. Greg Fries, we can find you at EPS411 and other blogs. Tell me about those.
Well, yeah, of course, EPS411, EverydayEMSTips.com. I've been preparing for you to ask me where I could be found to tell you that in just a few short days, I will be not far from the banks of the Little Wolf River in central Wisconsin, stalking the wily white-tailed deer. So that's where I will be soon.
But this morning on our phone conference, you said you had one in your yard today. Why can't you just step out and shoot them there? Wouldn't that be easier?
They're friends.
Yeah, those are my neighbors.
Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha. Well, thank you, and I hope good luck. I hope you kill Bambi and show your kids. That'll be great.
Bambi's dead.
I know Bambi's dead. Mr. Steve Whitehead, how about you? Where can we find you?
It looks like you can read me in the December issue of EMS Magazine. The article will be called The Power of Words. So if you want your Don't Make the Drunk Guy Angry certification for December, you can read The Power of Words. And you can wax philosophic with me 3 times a week at theemtspot.com.
And are you on Twitter?
I am. You can follow me on Twitter as well. Just at... Geez, what is my Twitter name?
I don't remember.
I don't get to look at it as often as everybody else.
At Steve Whitehead.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, there you
at
go.
At Steve Whitehead. You can also hook up from my Blogspot to my Twitter account as well. Nice. So
that's, you must not Twitter a lot.
Oh, I'm getting better. As Greg can attest, I'm getting better with the Twitter thing.
But nobody's like Greg. Holy cow. He's been tweeting during our discussion here. I can't even keep up with his tweeting on this. Yeah, and what number are you at for your tweets, Greg? How many have you done?
A lot. Too many. You know, some of my
billions
tweets are automated.
Billions.
Automated like ours is. 8,679. My most recent tweet was, quote, "Does anyone know my Twitter name?"
Nice.
Close quote. At Steve White had just asked.
Overheard. Nice. Mr. Jamie Davis, where can we find you?
Oh, I am so retweeting that.
It's going to be like the most retweeted thing I've ever had. Yeah.
Oh, I think that's great. We're gonna send that around. I'm gonna send that to Ms. Paramedic. She'll take care of making sure everybody sees it. you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/podmedic. Facebook.com/podmedic, and of course everything is over at medicast.com. And I would like to give a plug for the ProMed Network, promednetwork.com, where you can find this podcast, my podcast, Greg's podcast, and a whole lot of other medical podcasts in a variety of different fields and areas. So you know, check that out, because I just added another one today. A young gentleman is interviewing EMS authors. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with that.
Oh, very cool.
How's that, Greg?
That's great. I appreciate the young and the gentleman and the fact that I'll be interviewing.
It's you?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Greg's got
awesome.
A new podcast.
Wow. What's it called?
Good question. We were working on that idea, waiting for you, but I'm leaning towards something like Medical Author Chat or Medical Writers Speak, more than just EMS, but also, you know, nurses, physicians. And really focusing on sort of the non-textbook writing. You know, Kelly Grayson's book, I just interviewed Tom Middleton earlier today about his book, Saber's Edge. Got Tom Dick scheduled for an interview on Thursday, so.
Oh, are you going to talk about his book?
Yes.
I love People Care. Oh, pick that up. It's a great book. And Tom Middleton's book. If you're not on Twitter, you missed the chance. I had 2 books, and I gave them away right after the conference. He signed 2 books, and let me give them away. And I'm going to try and get a couple more from him so I can – we'll do some kind of contest here on the EMS Garage. So well, thank you. Go ahead, yeah. Greg.
I've got a copy that I'm going to give away.
Perfect.
As well.
Well, there you go. You do the first giveaway, and we'll do another one here maybe right before Christmas or something like that. I've got a really cool giveaway coming up around Christmas. Listen in for more details. My last thing tonight, I just want to give a plug. And if you guys aren't on Twitter, I know you may not be completely aware of what's going on in the world of EMS, but UK Medic and Happy Medic met up in San Francisco the past week, and we've been filming it. ChroniclesofEMS.com, the new reality series. We're actually looking to turn it into something. We don't know what yet, but it will be a reality series based on what we do. And Ted Setla's filming, and the cinematography, I hear, is absolutely amazing. Plus, those guys are really funny. Just seeing some of the outtakes, you can go to chroniclesofems.com. Oh, see, I almost did it like last week, Jamie. chroniclesofems.com, and go to the outtakes section and or the behind the scenes section and look at some of the funny things they're doing. That is not going to be the show. The show is going to be truly about what EMS is about, but the behind the scenes and the outtakes are pretty funny too. So find us on all those. You can find me, Geeky Medic, on all the social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn now. I don't know why I joined that, but I did. And because I guess I needed something else to do. You can find us, and you can find us every week here at emsgarage.com. Follow us on iTunes. We'll see you next week for more news and issues concerning you in EMS. Good night.
And the line, and your line goes live.
Do you have a tooth filling that maybe is brand new that is receiving radio signals?
Well, this is starting out well.
Mm.
Hey. Well, the good news is we're recording this, and it will likely be the most interesting thing we talk about.
Oh, hey. Wow, I don't know if that's a slam or, you know, I am the host. I could drop you, Greg. I mean, just like that. No, I'm teasing.
I dare you. Drop me. I dare you.
I wouldn't. Now that you say that, I'm really tempted, but I won't.
If you drop him on his head, he'll really see fireworks.
Yeah.
That's all right. I'm trying to respond to the book email I just got. So.
I am so sorry. I had.
That's all right. I'm writing a book back, so it's completely good. Okay.
I had 15 minutes. What else? You know, what else could I say? Well, we had a whole bunch of things. Everybody kept throwing things into the bag this week, so I wasn't sure what we all wanted to talk about. Okay, everybody kills my podcast. You're killing my podcast. And then we could talk about Dr. Wesley's article about PALS and the issues therein, and whether that's actually going to be going away or not.
I'm just getting ready to reset my PALS.
And Tim actually had some pretty interesting insight. Unfortunately, Dr. Wesley is not here tonight to defend his honor, as usual. So
what we really need is those study authors to come on and defend their honor.
I would love that. That would be great.
Oh. No, I want them in the back of an ambulance at about 80 miles an hour on a bumpy road with the lights not quite right, and tell them to go ahead and drop that tube, son.
You know, both Tim and I in the last week have written about, Tim's brilliant blog post title is, magic sirens are preventing or keeping ambulance drivers from hitting things. But that's a topic worthy of, I enjoy talking about it.
Okay, cool.
But I can talk about just about anything with...
with us or...
Yeah,
in your mind?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Hey,
you didn't finish the thought. I was like, are you really sure you can talk?
Based on this, I'm thinking we should just call this one Spot the Crazy Guy.
Ooh, I like it. I like it already. Ooh, hang on. I got to put that in the post.
I just mumble to myself.
Which one of us is hearing voices? Which one of us can't talk to anyone but ourselves?
If you'd like the update, the audience gave us a standing ovation, and they're gone. So they've cleared my head.
Wow!
Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
We'll thank them for us the next time they come by.
And what and what med do you use for that? Is that droperidol? I mean, I know it's black box, but maybe you've got a little extra.
Yeah. It's a little pink one. The doctor says to take it. That's all I know.
Well, it's better than the little blue one, so, you know.
Yes.
Well, it's
really, I have a choice between a red pill and a blue pill.
Clearly, I've taken the red.
Well, you have chosen to go down the rabbit hole.
That's right.
I was thinking about the little blue pill that, you know, is Viagra. I'm just
You were thinking about erections. He's thinking about the Matrix.
Thank you. Yes. Hey, what was that title again? I've already lost it because I am that crazy.
Spot the Crazy Guy.
Oh, nice.
Steve, just looking at your profile picture, you do look a little bit like Keanu Reeves.
You do. Wow. And I don't think not just Keanu Reeves. I mean, this is like a couple times in a row this week I've been amazed at how good you bloggers look. I'm kind of afraid. I mean, it's true that I really have a face for radio, and I'm learning it more and more every day. Justin Score, Happy Medic. I was like, holy cow, that guy's good looking. Now I see Steve Whitehead, good looking guy. I haven't seen Tim yet. You never know. I'm thinking I'm on the wrong side of this deal. I should be writing more.
Jamie, have you noticed that he's seen both of us in person and he's making no comment about our looks?
I said we have faces for radio.
I thought you were talking about yourself.
Oh, yeah, I was. You're right. Okay, but you don't blog. You don't blog, do you?
I blog daily.
I have like three different blogs I blog.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, never mind then. I thought you guys were just radio guys. What do I know? I never read your EMS tips. I'm sorry, Greg. I'm a loser.
Not only does he diss us on the looks, Greg, but he, you know, this particular crazy guy then turns around and tells us he doesn't read our stuff.
I'm getting schooled right now from Greg.
He
everyday
he just
EMS
you
tips.
Ugly and irrelevant at the same time.
Oh, here it comes. Here it comes.
I am honored.
Oh.
Yep. Making that Viagra more necessary all the time.
Yes.
God. This is just turning into...
Oh, it's already gone downhill. Well,
usually
I don't know if I should...
supposed to be the one slinging mud.
Well, we don't have Dr. Wesley. Oh, which reminds me... Okay, so all of you, since you are bloggers, and I didn't realize that, I want to get you and Justin and all of you on with Dr. Wesley, probably the second week of December, where Dr. Wesley's going to throw down his challenge to you bloggers. And I don't know if you listened to last week's show, but I don't think you're irrelevant. He thinks you are, and he has some strong opinions. So I think it'll be fun, and you guys could totally school him. That would be so much fun.